Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
It used to be when you would decorate your house for the holidays, it would be like an afternoon. And when you have a baby, it's sort of like a...
process where you sort of like venture through the land of decorating your house like one stop at a time over the course of several weeks.
Turns it into like a 401k sort of thing where it's like, well, I'm going to put this one ornament up in the hopes that here in the future, a few months from now, this is going to look real nice. But putting up Christmas decorations now is kind of like putting up baby traps when you got a baby as mobile and curious as ours.
That's true. It almost makes you wonder why you do it, because there are so many things that we have put up in our house. And as I'm putting them up, I think, gosh, I hope Charlie stays away from this because it could like fall on her and smush her.
Yeah, but
and
we
then
put
I
it
then
up.
I think like,
yeah.
Why did we put it
why
up?
Did
why did
we
do?
Up?
Why did we get a giant live tree and then put it in the corner and hang a bunch of like fragile like glass and stuff on it?
Like,
and
we
then
made
say,
it
like,
harder for ourselves. Like, we up the modifier, to use Halo terms. We put skulls on our baby run. And to try to make it more difficult.
Obviously, I understand that perfectly, too. Oh,
I know you didn't, dear. I'm trying to make the show as broadly appealing as possible.
But we have a tree that is, by the way, it's also pretty. So it's, of course, something she'd want
to... Very attractive.
She'd want
babies.
To touch. We have all kinds of little, like, tchotchkes and figurines, like glass things and porcelain things that she shouldn't touch, but she's going to want to, like, pick up and put in her mouth and then like throw on the ground.
Yeah, there's a lot that we are creating a lot of additional worries for ourselves with Christmas for no reason.
I've never put all the inflatables inside like we have this year.
Yeah.
Because she likes to hug them and kiss them.
I love that game.
And love them. And then she wants me to love them. And the problem is that it's cold outside, so I don't want to put them outside.
So we leave them
because then we have to go outside
and
hug them.
Yeah. It's not a great solution, but...
Do you think maybe we're setting up all these traps because, like, we've gotten lax because we don't have to worry about with kids so many of the, like, old, like, childhood diseases that we used to worry about back in the olden times?
It all seems too easy, you mean, so we're, like, creating challenge for ourselves.
Yeah, this is a way to make parenting more exciting.
Well, what
and terrifying.
Like, what kind of thing...
than it already is.
Yeah, what kind of thing is, like, not there? Because it, for me, it's pretty much... full-blown terror from dusk till dawn. Ooh. Or and dawn till dusk, and basically all the time.
Lots of things. But for instance, you don't as much have to worry about like scarlet fever these days.
Okay. I don't know that much about scarlet fever.
Betting on that, Justin.
Half the time when I hear it, I think about the scarlet letter, which is different, but it's one of the two times people use the word scarlet.
I would say there's three. I would say in reference to O'Hara.
Yeah, Gone with the Wind, yeah. And Miss Scarlet, I guess, from Clue. Hey, this is our show about how we talk about the times that the word Scarlet is used. Check next week, Violet. Catch it. Should be a good episode.
Let's talk about the fever, because that actually has to do with medicine.
Yeah.
I want to thank...
I got fever, and the only prescription is more talk about Scarlet Fever. SNL.
Great, Justin. Everybody loves that bit. So I want to thank a couple people, Emily and Dave and Eva, who recommended this topic. And Eva, by the way, wanted us to know that she was 11. Aww. Which is super cool.
Hi, Eva.
Thank you for listening. Yes, thank you. I love to hear that kids like this show too.
Here in about 7 years, when you have all the buying power, make sure you've gotten a lot of friends enlisted into the show too. We need a wave of new merchandise purchasers.
Our advertisers would rather you be 18.
Yeah, if you could just be 18. Like, we love you.
Or at least have money.
We love the whole 11-year-old thing that you're doing right now. But just for our demo, it would be best if you were 18 to 24, if you could do that.
We're kidding. We don't care. We love that you're a kid.
Thank you for clarifying that, Sydney, because they have not listened to our show for 114 episodes.
I don't know what age sarcasm becomes apparent.
Fair enough.
I think it depends on how sarcastic your parents are. Charlie's sarcastic already.
So sarcasm becomes apparent depending on when your parents became sarcastic.
Ha ha. Good one.
That was a good
one.
Please,
Justin,
just talk about scarlet fever. I'll do anything.
Okay. It's an old disease.
This has been the longest intro of my life.
I'm going to terrify you now. It's an old disease, but it's a very familiar bug that causes scarlet fever. Mm-hmm. It is caused by group A strep, or Streptococcus pyogenes, which is the same streptococcus that causes strep throat.
Not even worried about it. I get strep throat all the time. I used to. I beat it.
It's interesting because...
I think I might have it right now because I am like sucking down the chloroseptic.
You don't have strep throat.
Okay.
Everybody who has a sore throat always thinks they have strep throat. Chances are you don't. You might. I mean, by all means, get it checked out, but you probably don't. Now, we've known about strep infections clinically for a long time, as in like Hippocrates described a lot of different infections. And when I say strep infections, I'm talking about infections caused by streptococcal bacteria, a kind of bacteria in the Streptococcus family, mm-hmm. right? And basically the Streptococcus family they're named that because they look like little chains of berries. It's coccus means berry and strepto is chain of, and so it's a little, they look like little chains of berries.
I did not know that.
As opposed to staph or staphylococcus.
Look like staffs.
No. Oh. That's from staphyla for bunch of grapes. They look like little clusters.
Okay.
So there you go. That's your...
But you can understand my confusion.
I can understand that. That's okay. Fair. We didn't find out about the actual bacteria until the 1870s when Theodore Billroth actually saw it under a microscope. But we knew that there was something that sort of looked like scarlet fever clinically. We knew about like flesh eating disease. That's strep. Mm-hmm. We knew about strep throat in the sense that we understood that there was this syndrome that looked like that. But it took us a long time before we knew about the bacteria. Now, when we talk about scarlet fever, let me tell you what it is, because I'm guessing you don't even know what, like if somebody said I had scarlet fever, like what that would mean.
I always assumed that like it made the person really red. That's the only thing I've got.
Sort of. I mean, that's fair. Like you do get a rash.
Perfect.
That is red. So that's a fair guess. At first, it's like strep throat, basically. You get a sore throat. You get a fever. You might get like a headache, body aches. You just feel lousy, right? You get like swollen lymph nodes. Your tonsils can look like big and red and have like white nasty stuff on them. All that kind of stuff that you get when you get strep throat. Your tongue actually will get a very particular appearance. We call it strawberry tongue, where it can look like kind of whitish with like red bumps all over it. Mm-hmm. And then actually the white part will kind of slough off and then you'll just have like a big red bumpy tongue.
Great.
So look like a strawberry.
Sounds great.
And then the bad thing is when this...
The bad thing.
The bad thing.
So those are the good... Those
well,
are the
that's
okay
just
things.
Like... That's... I mean, like, a lot of that you just get with strep throat. And then nowadays, you get some antibiotics, you get better, it's over. Hopefully, it doesn't progress to scarlet fever, which is when... the characteristic part is that you see the rash. So you get these red bumps all over your body. They usually start on the neck and then move to the trunk and all of your extremities. They start like anywhere between 12 and 48 hours after the fever. And then it can be a really impressive looking rash. And it actually stays there for a week, 2 weeks, and then starts to kind of what we would call desquamate or like peel off. Mm-hmm. So it's a really impressive looking kind of rash. Now, the rash itself isn't dangerous. It just means that the strep has become invasive and it can do all kinds of bad things.
Okay.
So it can cause big abscesses or like pockets of infection on your tonsils. It can go anywhere. It can go to your heart. If you've heard of rheumatic fever,
mm-hmm.
it can affect your heart. It can affect your joints. It can affect your kidneys. You can get this, what we call a glomerulonephritis, which the important thing to know is it damaged your kidneys. It can go to your brain. It can go to, like, cause like a meningitis. It can go to your bones. It can go to your blood. It can go anywhere. And that's when it's scarlet fever. That is bad.
Because it's running wild like Hulkamania throughout your body.
Yes, exactly. And the question is, it's the same bacteria. So why sometimes do you just get strep throat? I mean, because this is not, it's not like if you had strep throat and we didn't treat you, everybody this would happen to. Like, I don't want to insinuate that. But some people who get strep throat, this could happen to. So why? There's some theories.
Is this a quiz or are you asking rhetorically?
No.
If one of those is true, I'm terrified.
There's some theories that it has to do with a certain toxin that's produced by some strains of that strep bacteria that can cause it to be more likely to do this, which is, it's kind of interesting. The reason some strep can do that is because they've been infected by a bacteriophage, which is a virus that infects bacteria. Did I just blow your mind?
So the bacteria can do it because the bacteria is sick?
Because the bacteria is sick with a virus that makes it produce a toxin that makes you sicker.
Whoa!
Crazy.
That's crazy.
But it's not always consistent because there are some people who get the bacteria that are infected and get the toxin, blah, 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 don't get scarlet fever. So it also has to do with the person and their immune system. It's really complex. The point is, we used to see it a lot. Nowadays, we almost never see it. Antibiotics certainly have something to do with that, but there's probably other factors involved. So that's scarlet fever, so that you kind of know what we're talking about.
Got it.
And as I said, Hippocrates may have been the first to write about it, like 2,500 years ago. It may go back to Rhazes wrote about it in the 10th century. But we know for sure that it was described by an Italian doctor, Giovanni Ingrassia, as rosacea, as its own distinct rash-causing, mm-hmm. you know, entity in 1553, and it was known as Febris scarlatina or
scarlet fever.
Good job.
Loosely translated.
Good job, Justin. By Sydenham in 1676. They also used to refer to it as scarlatina for short, which is kind of a,
I once knew a scarlatina, the love of my life.
It's an adorable name. Oh, you've got scarlatina. That's not, I mean, it's not like a cute thing to have. But
no,
it sounds,
it's
cute.
Scarlet fever still. Scarlet fever by any other name, et cetera, et cetera.
There were a lot of early writings that probably are describing scarlet fever, but they, you know, there were a lot of things that caused red rashes. So it gets really tricky. Like, are they writing about measles? Are they writing about rubella? What are they writing about? That for a while, there was a distinct clinical entity that was described called Duke's disease, because Clement Dukes knew that there was something that wasn't rubella that caused a rash, and they called it Duke's disease. But then we figured out that that was scarlet fever, actually, which the only important part about this is, have you ever heard of
poor Duke? I bet he was so bummed. You know, he had that whole disease named after him, and then all of a sudden,
they're like, nope, sorry, that was scarlet fever all along.
Scarlet fever all along. Well, he said, well, what, maybe we just change scarlet fever, start calling that Duke's disease. Maybe. I named it too.
Didn't catch on. You know, it is kind of weird, though, because have you ever heard of the term Fifth's disease? Have you ever heard of that, Fifth's disease?
No.
Okay. Well, a lot of people have.
Would this part be better if I... Let me try again. Oh, yeah.
It's a different virus. The only reason that matters is people have asked me before, like, why is it called Fifth, as in like the number five, like Fifth's disease? Because we used to have like a list of the common childhood, like what we call viral exanthems, meaning viruses that cause rashes. And well, although they weren't all viral, they're just exanthems. The list went in order of when you were likely to get them. So it was like measles and then scarlet fever and then rubella. The fourth one. So for a while, scarlet fever was called Fourth's disease, was Duke's disease.
Okay.
So scarlet fever was on this list twice. So it threw off the whole list, because then fifth is erythema infectiosum, which we call Fifth's disease because that sounds a lot easier. And then roseola is sixth. But there's the list is off. Fifth disease should be Fourth's disease.
Oh, man.
Isn't that crazy?
I bet you guys have a good laugh about this at the office Christmas party, huh?
Anyway. Up until the 1800s, scarlet fever was endemic in certain areas, meaning that you would always see a couple cases, but would periodically cause big outbreaks, like every, you know, decade or so, but not commonly. You know, it wasn't something that you saw in large numbers.
That's interesting to me, because if what you're talking about, like the bacteria having to be a precursor to that, like a certain kind of bacteria being sick, like that would be what was spreading, right? Like when it would come in waves. That is actually what was happening, if that theory holds water, right?
Exactly.
Like, you wouldn't expect an outbreak of something that would or wouldn't evolve into scarlet fever, right?
Exactly. It was either that strain started to predominate, you know, the one that produced the toxin, and then you see an outbreak. Or you could also theorize that it was, and this can happen with outbreaks, it's spreading to populations that aren't already affected by it. Mm-hmm. So like a virgin population, somebody okay. who doesn't have any innate immunity. So when it spreads beyond kind of the community that's already been dealing with it, you might see an outbreak too.
All right.
But yeah, that's a good point. Good job, Justin.
Hey.
Sciencing.
No problem.
You science the heck out of that one.
No big deal.
In the 1800s, we start to see some cyclical outbreaks with very high mortality in urban centers. So like places of dense population, you right. see a lot of people actually dying of scarlet fever. But there's still just these kind of, like, they crop up, there's a big outbreak, and then it goes away. This happens up until the 1880s, when the outbreaks start to lessen in frequency and severity and mortality, and then finally the mortality drops to like 1%, and then in the 1900s it's not quite as big a deal and it starts to be less terrifying, and then finally we move to now where like we never see it. So when we think about like the period of time when scarlet fever was really a scary thing, because there was this time in history where scarlet fever was terrifying, we're really talking about between like 1825 and 1880s. That was the time period where, for whatever reason,
the good old days in terms of scarlet fever's time.
For scarlet fever it was
for
good
scarlet
old days.
Fever
for humanity
days.
It was not, but that's when we see that scarlet fever is actually a fairly large contributor to like childhood mortality. I mean, it's common, and it is much more severe than it would be now.
Mm-hmm.
So the treatments I want to talk about for scarlet fever mainly come from this time period. Okay.
Right. Because after that, it was like not such a big deal.
Well, once we get to the 1940s and we get antibiotics, everything gets less exciting
yeah.
in terms of the infectious
again,
disease.
Right. Yeah.
from the perspective of bacteria and viruses. Well, really just bacteria.
Right.
So treatments. So if you got scarlet fever in the 1800s, the first thing they would do is load you up in a fever cab,
mm-hmm.
like an ambulance kind
like
of thing.
Like a cash cab.
Like a cash cab, exactly.
Basically like a cash cab.
They'll ask you questions on the way to the hospital. You won't be able to answer them because you got scarlet fever.
Right.
And they would take you to the hospital where you would stay in isolation for weeks. This was very common at the time, like just lock them away in the hospital, keep them away from everybody else because you didn't want anybody else to get scarlet fever. All of your belongings would be burned.
Which sounds bad, but, you know, it was the mid-1800s. There, you didn't have a lot of things. You probably had like one dress and like a baking pan and like a wash bin. They were probably like the only things you had.
Is that what you think everybody had in the 1800s?
Probably a Bible, too.
No, you know what this reminds me of, though? Did you ever read The Velveteen Rabbit?
No.
Do you know that book at all?
Yeah, it's about scarlet fever.
It is.
Took a shot in the dark, nailed it,
and won. It's about a little boy and his stuffed bunny, but he gets scarlet fever, and so they have to burn the Velveteen Rabbit.
Sounds like a really killer book. Can't wait to crack that one open.
It's okay, though, because the Velveteen Rabbit gets turned into a real bunny, I guess, before it gets burned, or maybe that's like heaven for the stuffed animal. I don't know.
Can you... Please move on. This is like Omega bumped me.
There's also a character in it called the Skin Horse, I think.
Cool. Family show.
We should read that to Charlie later.
Maybe you could just recount it to her because your way of telling it is so beautiful. I really feel like I'm getting all the nuance.
If you had something you really didn't want to burn.
Skin Horse clumped out from the darkness. And the Velveteen Rabbit burned alive because scarlet fever. This is a children's story, eh?
He became real because he was loved.
Or maybe he was in heaven. Like, get your facts straight, Samara. Okay, so if you didn't want to burn all your things, which I can't imagine, like, I know your things kind of sucked because it was the 1800s, but, like, who wants to burn all their things?
Well, they make a point that there are some things, like wool, for instance, that you could just put in an oven for 2 hours at 220 degrees Fahrenheit, and that would probably kill it, and that the fabric would probably survive. So if you had the time...
And what else are you doing? You have scarlet fever.
You have scarlet fever. You're just going to lay in bed anyway. So you're going to stay in bed. And that was very important because if you didn't stay in bed for the first 2 weeks, you would get what they called dropsy, which you could get dropsy of a lot
dropsy.
Of things.
Why is that? Did we talk about dropsy recently?
We've talked about dropsy on and off. in this sense, they're meaning edema. They're meaning swelling. They're meaning fluid places.
Okay.
Dropsy was used to describe a lot of different ways that fluid could accumulate.
One of those imprecise things, right?
Yeah. So they would say, like, you could get, like, dropsy of the lungs or dropsy of the legs or dropsy of whatever of the heart, and it was fluid. The main treatment while you were there would be bleeding. This is the time period we're in. So you would either cut the patient and bleed them until their lips and cheeks become pale and they pass out. And that'll work. Or blister them for the same effect. Or you could apply 2 to 6 leeches behind or below the ears on each side.
2 to 6. So 2 to 6. Depending on how bad your scarlet fever was, I guess.
That's the art of medicine. It's that you know, right. The science is, you know, it's between 2 and 6 leeches. The art is how many exactly for this patient. usually bleeding is the worst of the treatments, but things got a little rougher for our scarlet fever patients.
What happened?
Well, I'm going to tell you about it, Justin, but first, why don't you come with me to the billing department?
Let's go. Okay, so Sid, you had just told me that the worst of it was not the bleeding. What was the worst of the treatments?
So this was a time where we didn't really know what to do for a lot of different things. The humors kind of were still part of, you know, the idea that we have these 4 humors that we have to keep in balance, which is where the bleeding comes in. So we would just, as we've discussed before, kind of try whatever seemed to cause a big response in the patient, make them pee or poop or puke or something or bleed. And so, you know, we would also give people emetics, which means medicines that make you puke, to purify your body. And then the diet that would follow, like kind of cleaning the person out, so to speak, was pretty rough. So at first you want to avoid anything that would be hard on the stomach. So obvious stuff, liquor, spices, anything that's animal based, you pretty much stay away from at first. There was a concoction of podophyllin, which is like this alkali that's made by plants that, the reason I know about it is that we can apply it to genital warts.
Oh, okay.
But in this case, you would want to mix it with Epsom salts and like eat it. Was like one of the treatments.
Delish.
And then you would also make a mixture of aloe and salt and treacle, a little tastier probably.
Yeah.
And eat that as well. Once you were tolerating that, once you're tolerating that well,
yeah,
you can move on to toast or barley or rice water, and you want to add some potassium nitrate in that, which by the way is saltpeter, which I think is like used to make gunpowder.
Sure.
Right. You want to throw that in there, and like also some ammonium acetate as well, which is like used for like different chemical reactions and stuff.
Sure.
Now,
yeah, why not?
In addition, so as long as you're eating all of this weird stuff that's going to help clean out your body, you want to do something to the tonsils themselves, because you know you started with like a strep throat kind of thing,
yeah.
Right? So you want to take some silver nitrate, which we still use silver nitrate some today. I've used it before in the office to like stop bleeding. It's mm-hmm. like on the end of these sticks, and it like stops. It's caustic. It's not very comfortable. And you would apply it
That is a generous way of putting it, huh?
Not very comfortable. You would apply it to the ulcerated tonsils morning and night with a camel hair pencil, is what was described.
A camel hair pencil?
Is that like a brush?
Maybe a brush?
I would have thought a brush, but they say pencil. Maybe that's just maybe they're using a different brush.
Who knows?
Anyway, camel hair pencil, silver nitrate to the ulcerated tonsils morning and night.
I'd rather be bled. Go ahead. That doesn't do anything, but it's less like unpleasant, I guess.
If you've got the big swollen lymph nodes, like you can get like in your neck, you know, when you have strep throat, you might get what people call swollen glands.
Yeah.
Like lymphadenopathy is what I would say. You can treat that by creating an ointment made from iodine and suet, which Justin can tell you what suet is if you don't know.
Yeah, it's like pig fat.
It's like the fat from around the kidneys of like pigs and cows and stuff.
It's used in British baking a lot.
Yeah, like we...
Now they use... It's more common to find vegetable suet now, but anyway.
Yeah, but I'm assuming this would have been animal-based suet back in the day. Mix it with iodine, make an ointment, put it on a piece of soft leather, and then just like wrap it around your neck and like keep that on there.
Okay.
Eventually, when you're starting to get better, you could advance your diet. And diet was a big part of this, if you can't tell. Like, the idea that, I don't know, we don't know what else to do to people. So, like, maybe we'll just regulate what they eat really closely.
Because they had literally no other ideas.
Because we're trying anything. We're definitely, yeah, we're into the, like, the heroic era of medicine right now. So, like, just whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever. You would advance to broth and tea after 2 to 4 days. And you would feed them broth or tea or both every 3 hours, which is, like, really demanding on whoever, like your nursing staff, whoever's doing
it. Yeah, but for an era of medicine called the heroic era of medicine, it's still kind of tame. Like, if you were keenly aware that the era you were practicing medicine in was called the heroic era of medicine, like, I would think you'd be a little bit intimidated to just announce, like, and now I'm going to give the patient broth much more frequently than they would normally have broth. Like, that's not very heroic, doctor. I mean, it's okay, but it's not like, not gonna wow me. I'm not gonna like adapt it into a 3-part series. It's not gonna like could be a crossover event.
Can you imagine how ticked off the nurses would have been? Like, seriously, seriously, every 3 hours.
Every 3 hours.
That's what you want me to do. That's what you want me to do with my training. That's
it. Do you have a PP solution or no? Okay, great.
You could also give them at this point something. I had to read about this. Liebig's essence of meat. This is a Liebig is it's a trade name. It's a product brand name. Who has
the
time
to eat meat? Not me. I just want the
essence. And that was actually exactly the thought, was that people need the nutrients from meat, but they can't afford meat, or they don't have the time or whatever the means to eat meat itself.
So it's that robust, hearty meat flavor and nutrients.
This was this like tinned meat product that you would make by like boiling down. It actually was like a 30-to-1 ratio. Like by boiling down like 30 kilos of meat, you get like 1 kilo of, you know.
Sounds expensive
meat
to make.
Essence. Right. Yeah, that's what I thought. Like that's a lot of meat to go into.
But there's probably not a lot of, how am I going to put this, choice cuts in there, I would think.
I wouldn't think
you get a lot of choice cuts.
You add a lot of salt to it. And I guess I heard it described as like a, like almost like a black paste, like oily paste kind of thing. Ugh, in like a bottle, and you would eat some of that. You could, I guess, spread it on bread or whatever you wanted to do,
or just quit.
And it was often thought of as something for like to like help sick people heal, or just to use for kids who were like malnourished or didn't have access to all the foods they need. Like, just eat this meat essence and you'll get better. I think later they were making bouillon cubes.
I mean, that would be something.
If the patient's head is hot and they start to get confused, so I'm assuming like what we would call now like a fever and maybe some delirium, you should shave their head.
Okay.
It's very important. They'll die if you don't. That was an important point. So shave their head.
Really?
Yeah. No, I mean, not really. But No, that was the thought. Then on their now bald head, you want to put ice or cold rags on the head. Keep the head really cold. Your feet, you want to wrap in flannel and then stick them in like a warm water bath. Mm-hmm. And then sponge down the rest of them with like tepid, like, you know, room temperature kind of water.
Okay.
I don't know if we're like confusing the bacteria at this
point.
Yeah,
right. What are
it's
you
hot,
doing?
It's cold, it's lukewarm. I don't know there? What's happening. I don't know where to go. You want to apply a solution, because you could get like some like drainage from the mucous membranes, like right, crustiness and stuff. So you want to apply a solution to your eyes and your mouth, and with a dropper into your ears, of borax.
Okay, I still am unclear what borax is, but it sounds kind of chemically.
It was like a chemical, like we used it to like remember we talked about it as like a food additive for a while to like keep food fresh longer, preservative kind of thing. Just it cleans stuff.
Sounds like an alien weapon.
It's not a good idea to put it in your eyes, ears, mouth, or anywhere else in your body. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure that the patient is peeing every 6 hours and pooping daily. And give them whatever medicines are necessary to make that happen if they're not.
Got it.
As they get better, you want to advance to solid foods very slowly, because that is the first thing they would say, is that if somebody dies of scarlet fever, it's probably because you gave them solid food too quickly.
Okay.
That's probably not true.
No.
You can go outside. As soon as you're able to get outside, that's great, because fresh air was seen as like a kind of a cure-all. Exactly. But don't walk.
Run.
No, don't do. Just sit.
Okay, like
have
got
somebody
it.
Just wheel you out and sit in the beginning, and only if the weather is good, of course.
Of course. Right.
If you can get to the seaside,
you don't want
to
get double scarlet fever.
No, which you could.
Which you could.
You want to go to the seaside if you can, because the air there is better for you. But don't get in the water for at least a month. Mm-hmm. That was actually in the Velveteen Rabbit too. The kid had to go to the seaside. They always advise, like, as you're getting better, you want to do like a tonic, which there were tons of tonics at the time, which were just like syrups with like iron or something in them that was seen as like boosting your health and making you more vibrant or something, you know, whatever. At the time that, you know, this was like homeopathy was around at this period in history. It still is now, but this is when it would have been popular.
It still is now. And by the way, quick homeopathy sidebar. I went to the drugstore because Charlie had a cold and I was looking for some medicine that we could give her.
By the way, he didn't ask me about this because if he had asked me, I would have said no. There is no medicine
that
we can give her. So don't bother.
What I wanted to say is I was looking and because I was there already. It wasn't a special trip. But anyway, there was some stuff that was for 12 months and younger and it was labeled as homeopathic medicine. And it was on the same shelves as the other medicine. Like, that made me really angry because that's fake. Like, there should be another section with the fake medicine if you want to go hog wild on it, but don't get it over there with the real medicine for people that don't know any better. That's crazy.
Well, that's the problem is that, first of all, they can say that it's for 12 and under because it is fake, 12 months and under because it's not going to do anything. You know, and it's not regulated by anybody. None of that stuff is, though, anyway. Isn't regulated, like the supplements and the homeopathic.
We tried to be pretty nice during our homeopathic episode, but that was a while back in Sawbones history. We tend to go ham on stuff a little bit more commonly now. I'm just going to say that's made up medicine. And it doesn't have any place next to the real medicine. In case you have it, you can go back and edit that into your own personal copy of the homeopathy episode, by the way.
Yes, absolutely. No, homeopathy, it doesn't do anything. And back then they told you.
And it's for babies. That makes me so angry.
Yeah.
It's so friggin' hard to have a baby who's sick and you feel like completely powerless. There's nothing you could do. You're looking for anything that can help. And you find this fake medicine next to real medicine. It makes me want to friggin' puke. It makes me sick that the stores would sell it next to the real medicine. It makes me sick that people would sell it to people knowing it doesn't do anything. And if I ever met the people responsible, I would punch them in the mouth. There. That's what I think about homeopathy.
Wow.
Makes me mad.
You got really upset there.
I'm genuinely upset.
Can I just make one corollary point?
If you're going to defend homeopathy,
I'm not defending homeopathy. Okay. I'm not in any way. I am also going to point out that what you are calling the real medicines, I would be really careful about ever giving your kids if they're sick. Don't if they're under two. But if they're over two, I would really talk to your doctor because this is something I talk with parents a lot about, that a lot of those cough and cold medicines, I know we all take them as adults because like our nose is running and we got to go to work and it's embarrassing. And so we deal with all of the not so great side effects. As far as if you need them, you usually don't. Your kids often don't. I would talk to your doctor before just giving them any of the what we would consider real medicines. Yes, they do things, but do you really need them to do those things at the expense of the side effects? Just a note.
We're going way long. I'm sorry about this. Sorry about it. It's my fault.
No, you're right. Homeopathy is crap. They used to tell you to take belladonna to prevent scarlet fever because belladonna caused a rash and it was the whole like cures like thing. So if we cause a rash, then you won't get a rash from scarlet fever. Mm-hmm. That's obviously not true. Don't take belladonna. A couple historical notes, one of which I already mentioned. Scarlet fever impacted a lot of people. Charles Darwin lost two of his children to scarlet fever. Yikes. John D. Rockefeller founded Rockefeller University to research the biomedical sciences eventually after losing his three-year-old grandson, scarlet fever. So that's probably why it exists. There has been some thought that maybe that was what Helen Keller lost her hearing and vision to at 19 months was to scarlet fever, although it may have also been a meningitis. So that's not.
I actually think I read scarlet. Like, I can remember reading like a kid's book about her and reading that it was scarlet fever.
It's hard because at the time, a lot of people would have been diagnosed with scarlet fever. And maybe because we couldn't tell because we didn't know what they had. So she may have, or maybe not, or it could have been meningitis. It's not entirely clear. And that is why, like, for instance, we used to think Mary Ingalls, a lot of people would read that, had scarlet fever because her doctor at the time did diagnose her with scarlet fever, but she probably actually did have meningitis too. It is what Beth had in Little Women.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can never remember scarlet fever.
Had her yellow.
Or yellow fever.
Yeah.
No, it was definitely scarlet fever.
Got it.
Big difference.
She didn't travel. Huge difference. Sub-Saharan Africa. Is that where yellow fever is hot?
Yeah, you can get, yeah. Lots of places, but yeah.
Explosion noise. Got in one.
The treatment in terms of like what do we actually do now for scarlet fever, because we don't do any of that stuff that I just named. In 1924, you know that Gladys and George Dick actually did make a vaccine which is kind of interesting. They came up with a test for it, and then they came up with a vaccine. But it really was never that popular. And in the 1940s, we came out with antibiotics. Penicillin saves the day. Mm-hmm. And we really don't use the vaccine. It's certainly not around now. And nowadays, we don't really see that kind of virulence. There are occasionally, in the last couple decades, we've seen some bigger outbreaks, like Hong Kong in 2011. But we typically don't see scarlet fever anymore. Most of the time, it's just strep throat. We give you some antibiotics and you get better.
Interesting.
But it is interesting. It's not impossible that it could happen.
Well, good to know. Live in fear. I want to say,
just go see your doctor when you're sick. That's always my message. When you're sick, go talk to your doctor.
And a big thanks to the taxpayers for letting us use their song "Medicines" as the intro and outro of our program. Anything we're forgetting?
No, I think that's it. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for your topic suggestions. Mm-hmm. Thank you for emailing us and reviewing us on iTunes and tweeting about us.
Sawbones@MaximumFun.org is that email address. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's @Sawbones. Pretty easy to remember.
Yeah, I'm sorry Justin got so mad this episode.
Yeah, me too. And I'm sorry if you're homeopathy and you're listening. I'm sorry that it has to come to this.
Yeah.
If you're the concept of homeopathy and you somehow figured out a way to listen to podcasts, I'm sorry that I stepped on your toes. If you really are a true believer in homeopathy, I think that's groovy. I just think you should buy it at a separate store or maybe separate shelves at the very least. Anyway, that's going to do it for us. Until next time, we have a topic to discuss with you. I am Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
As always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.